I want to bring Jade in on the stage. As I mentioned, we did a networking event a few months ago. We broke out into sections, and the group said, Jadeen's, what she's working on is amazing. And the title can be a little scary, The Harmonic Bridge Between the Tech Space and Nature.
Ooh.
But what's interesting is what she's actually working on and how the wearables and the technology that we keep advancing, how it relates back to ancient Egypt and the technology that they developed and the science. And so, Jadeen, come on up on stage. We're very excited to have you speak. Give her a round of applause.
Good morning, everybody. Can you hear me? No? What about now?
No.
No. Okay, I'll just hold it. All right. So I'm really happy to be here. This was something I've been coming to Across Campus for maybe a year and 8 months or something like that, and kind of been thinking the whole time, you know, how can I relate my, you know, art ecologist side interests to, you know, all this digital tech and, you know, app creation and programming that this crowd seems to be doing all the time. And it's funny, the word bridge really is appropriate both to that solution that I eventually came up with and then also the topic that I have for you. So I'm hoping this is relevant to you guys. And I'm just curious, there was a mention of hiking just a minute ago. I'm curious, how many people in this room have had an experience in nature of any significance to them, you know, whether it be calming or spiritual? Okay, so quite a few of you. So that's really great and relevant. So I want to kind of tap into that. So I'm just going to warn you, the slide that I'm going to start with is going to be the most dense kind of hard slide for us, and then it'll get easier after that. So it's a pretty dense topic. So again, my name is Jadeen Mela, and my company is Harmonic Artworks. So, this might be something that you've never heard of, and that's why I want to spend some time on it. So, I'm going to read this to you because it is pretty dense. The ancient Egyptians used the word netter, and they spelled it in two different ways there, as you can see, to describe intelligent, higher harmonic elemental forces responsible for holding or stewarding the energy growth patterns of the natural world. Now, that's a lot, right? Well, this is something that ancient Egypt knew about and worked with in their entire culture. They built their architecture based on this. They partnered with these entities. So these beings are non-physical in the sense that they actually vibrate on frequencies of the electromagnetic spectrum that are higher by octaves up from what we can perceive. And that's why I have the little, you know, electromagnetic spectrum sort of graph there. That little guy in the middle is our visual range, so it's pretty small. And this is, I think this is fascinating, this is really just the EMF spectrum that we've discovered in the known universe. It doesn't mean that this is the full range of frequencies that exist, right? So the Devic intelligence that we're talking about, they are on a harmonious bandwidth, if you will. They operate in sync with healing frequencies coming out of the heart of nature. You know, whatever it is you believe to be the creative force of the universe, they are operating at that locus point. And they can be engaged through harmonic design. And what that engagement does is actually benefit human health and evolution. So that's what I'll be talking about today. And being that I'm a landscape designer with a focus on ecology, I think it's just profoundly beautiful that the word nature actually comes from netter. So I wanted to give you kind of the best example I could think of, and that's Giza. This is an object that was designed using the science that I'll be talking about today. So first of all, you know, it's not really called a pyramid. That's actually a Greek word that was overlaid onto the Kemet or Egyptian language. So the Egyptians knew and today know Giza as Per-Netter, and that literally translates into the house of the Netter. And I think that's really important to use this example, which is why I selected it, because when we design an object using this science, it creates a house where these entities, these netters, can actually perceive the object, and they can communicate with us through that object. So it's literally a dimensional gateway. And I know the word dimension is a little woo-woo, but if you just think of frequency, it's science. So another thing that I think is important to note is that Giza is not four-sided. It's really hard to get a good picture of the fact that Giza is actually eight-sided. This happens to be one of the few pictures that exist that does show it. You can see that line down the middle. So it is designed with a little bit of an indentation down all four sides, and that's very intentional. So what that does is it transmutes the toxic vertical component of the electromagnetic wave. That, so if you look, and I have a slide later that shows that there's a vertical component, it's the electrical, and there's a horizontal, and that's the magnetic, electromagnetic wave, right? So the vertical has toxic effects on biology. So the Egyptians, or whoever did build the pyramid, we're still not sure, right, did that in this way to both attract the Netters and then engage the energy that's associated with them to heal the land and create that sustainable culture that the Egyptians had for thousands of years. So that's a really prime example I think you guys could all relate to, and I think it's also fascinating. Okay, we got through the first slide. All right, so there's that electromagnetic wave I was talking about. So the spiritual science, and it is a spiritual science, that's how it's described by the Egyptians who taught me how to do this and who use it today. It is an iterative design system. And being that I'm a landscape designer, I'm, you know, basically a person who's, I've always been a designer artist type, and I'll be talking about the MFA that I got in applied craft and design. So it was kind of perfect that I ended up rendezvousing with this science. So it allows us to do two things, and I kind of alluded to this already. We're opening a higher harmonic gateway of communication. And again, if you think about music, you look at octaves, right? There's these nodal points. And in the title slide, I had that, you could see that sine wave that was, there were sine waves inside of sine waves. There are those node points, right? And in music, you know, if you hit a G up here and a G down here, they're in sync, right? They'll hit the tuning fork. That's kind of what we're talking about here. I think the relevance to this innovation community here in the tech space is that really, and this is what happened to me in my master's degree program, and I will show you more about that, it allows for co-creative innovation. Pretty exciting, especially since the second thing that the science achieves is the transmutation of the electromagnetic wave. And we know these to be very, very toxic. So the science that I'm working with protects body organ systems from degenerative disease. So the science is actually has been used for 50 years around the world. The founder has been hired by governments, states, countries to do all kinds of projects. Some of the areas where it's been proven so far are in agriculture. This is an actual picture of a control crop of apples and then where the science was applied to the apples. The crops, I think it was a sweet potato, have also been grown in seawater. And weirdly enough, not only did the plant grow, which you can't do, right? That doesn't work. It was healthier than the one that was grown without the science applied in freshwater. There's also instances of, you know, where livestock lost all their hair, stopped reproducing, and then the science was applied. In this particular instance, there was a cell tower installed in a town, and all the livestock just stopped producing. All the residents intuitively went down into their basements and stopped coming up to the surface. The science was applied. All the livestock got their hair back and started having babies again. This is a pretty serious thing, right? I mean, food security and all of that, right? Health. So we've got documentation that it cures hepatitis C, so it protects the liver in adults. There's a lot of studies more recently that it's curing autism in children. And then if you're looking at car and air travel, it's pretty toxic. You're exposed to a lot of radiation, and I will talk a little bit more about that. And then in the tech sphere, this is actually a 5G tower there. 5G is supposedly going to make us all more connected, but I'll talk a little bit more about how that might not be the best of things for us in a minute. But basically, there's that transmutation and protection against EMF, as well as that opening to a co-creative energy. Oh, and I wanted to say, you see a lot of ankhs in the Egyptian reliefs throughout all the carvings that they have and all the buildings and whatnot. That ankh shape is actually a device. So that's designed with the science that I'm talking about. It's a very specific energetic device. And you can see in these in images like this that it's being used to heal someone. So I think that's just important to kind of note. So I have this funny little graphic. How does this connect to contemporary tech innovation? What's the relevance of ancient design, especially this system of spiritual harmonic design? How does that connect to what a lot of people in this room might be working on? So, you know, I keep mentioning this, it's very toxic. So let's get into specifically what the science has found most recently. So not just cancer, you know, EMF causes heart diseases, type 2 diabetes is what it's been linked to. And also something that we see a lot of, I've heard a lot of people just talk about being anxious all the time and they don't know why. I've experienced that too. It's sometimes hard to get around it. And it's like, why am I feeling so anxious? What is this? Well, we're being bathed in electromagnetic radiation, just coming from everything. It's bombarding us, right? And it keeps getting ramped up, especially with the introduction of 5G. So connection to these netters will allow us to access ancient wisdom that Egypt used. They did use this to sustain their culture for millennia, as I mentioned. We can co-create using this harmonic technology. And it's not just going to protect us, it's going to help us evolve, right? So instead of banging on all these other things, we're going to be banging on the computer. I thought that was just really relevant and funny. Okay, here's the other big kind of dense slide that I have for you, and I promise the rest of them won't be as dense. This is my sort of journey through this. So how I came to learn the spiritual science of ancient Egypt, in the winter of 2012, I had a friend just come up to me out of the blue and put the book The Artist's Way in my hand. Have you guys ever heard of that book, The Artist's Way? Pretty famous book. Everything that every person I've ever heard who's gone through that book said it's changed their life, right? Well, it changed my life too. I was unemployed. I had 3 months and I said, well, why not? She said, you know, you talk about art school a lot. Why don't you go? And I said, I do. I didn't even realize I had been talking about art school. That's how unconscious I was. In the spring of 2013, I heard an interview on talk radio with the founder of a contemporary adaptation of the science. And I instantly knew I wanted to learn it. I just said, oh, that's for me. That's part of my life work. I want that. And then I instantly decided, well, he's in Cairo. This is never going to happen. Oh, well, right? I had started interviewing art schools because The Artist's Way had prompted me to think of myself as an artist. And in fact, I fit the profile exactly of what they call the shadow artist, where you go into fields like landscape architecture, you know, and, you know, but you're not an artist. So I had interviewed all these schools and I was living in Portland at the time. I found one that had a studio-based program. And so I was told by the Fed, though, that there was not enough financial aid to go to grad school. So I thought, well, okay, you know, I mean, this wasn't my original intention anyway. I'm just sort of following the spiritual path that I seem to be on. But I kept the appointment that I had with an advisor who had offered to look at my portfolio. I didn't really have a portfolio. I had some pictures of some stuff I had made. A lot of it was jewelry, some clothing and whatnot. So I kept that because I thought, well, it'd be a free critique. Well, why not go? We had a great meeting, and he said, your jewelry is the strongest thing that you're doing. And so for your admissions, he didn't know. I didn't tell him I wasn't going to be able to go. He said, you should just make a bunch more of this and show that and use that in your application. So I'm walking out the door from that meeting, and I just, again, there's that spiritual side again of this journey. I just felt this pull to the left, and it was the opposite direction of the door. So I said, well, I'll just follow it. Why not? So I turn left and I end up in the financial aid office and they're looking at me like, can we help you? And I just said, so I just told them that, well, I don't know really why I'm here, but I was told that I couldn't go, blah, blah, blah. And they pulled up my actual file and they said the feds had just given me a general answer. And yes, there was enough to go and you have 2 weeks. And I said, oh, okay, well, why not? So I just did it. I put together a new body of work. I built a portfolio and I wrote a thesis proposal. And weirdly enough, in keeping with this sort of journey, being kind of esoteric or mystical, they awarded me a scholarship because it was such a strong proposal. I was the only person in the program who ended up sticking to my original proposal. But it meant a lot to me. I kind of knew what I wanted to do. So that happened and I was kind of in awe. And in spring of 2014, I found this cache of yarn in the building where we had our studio space. I didn't think that was significant. I just was very attracted to the colors. It was a bunch of hemp yarn and then some linen yarn. And I asked around. I said, you know, whose is this? Why is this in the ceramic studio? And one of the second year students said, well, somebody who graduated last year just left it to donate to whoever would like to use it. I took it into my studio space and thought, you know, I'm going to use that at some point. And I don't know how. So then I found out as well at that time that the design system that I had heard that on that radio interview was actually being offered in the United States. This was at the only school in the United States that was allowed to teach this. So, but it was in North Carolina And I hate flying. I hate it. I just, it's the worst thing ever to me. I'm a very earthbound person. I'm a Taurus. I don't want to go up. And so I thought, well, I need to commit to this. If this is going to unfold like this, I need to follow the spiritual unfolding of it. So I buckled down and I just gritted my teeth and I flew for the first time in 20 years. I got the training. It was amazing. And then I began to develop the brand that I had intended to develop in this around this work. So I came up with the concept, did keyword research, built a brand, did all that, took a branding and marketing class. In the fall of 2014, I started watching YouTube tutorials on how to knit. I found it really funny because in a master's program, you know, it's you're thinking, oh, well, I should know how to do art, but I never had a BFA, right? Because I'd always thought, well, I don't deserve to be an artist. I can't get a BFA. I have to get something more practical, right? So while I was watching these videos, it's teaching you how to... Does anybody here knit? Okay, one person. So knitting is kind of complicated, I think. But the videos were great. They were very small videos or short. So it was like how to cast on, how to start the knitting. And I would watch that and I would then try it, you know, and I'd pause it and I'd rewind it till I got it. And then it would teach you how to knit and purl. And what that is basically just to create the actual knit piece. Really straightforward. It's the most basic knit you can do. I looked at the video and it was all very tightly woven and perfectly symmetrical. And then I looked at what I was doing and it was like really not like that at all. And this is one of those moments where intuitively I just decided to, again, follow what was happening instead of fight it and push for what I thought for whatever reason needed to happen. So the weave looked like what you see in that sculpture at the bottom. That's one of the sculptures that I did. It's a knit sculpture. And you can see, I know that it's kind of small. It actually took me a long time to get this to make this image for you guys. But you can see that the weave or the knit of it is just really wide open. There's a lot of space. There's just big holes in it. And then in some cases, you can see there's a hole up in the left there, that just happened. I ended up thinking it was beautiful and I just went with it, whatever. I later had an assignment where we had to do some research and present some research around the forming thesis. And I found out that my knit pattern very closely resembled the magnification of plant cells, even down to where you have these large holes in it. And I thought, oh, okay, yeah, there's something going on here, right? All these synchronicities and connections. This is relevant because, as I said, the netters are very directly responsible for the patterns of organic growth in the natural world. So the forms that trees take, you know, has anyone heard of the Mandelbrot set? These sort of fractal patterns that everything in nature takes, I just thought, okay, this is definitely, I'm being led towards something here. There's too many connections, right? So that was pretty cool. And then in the spring, this is really important. This is where it gets really like kind of woo-woo. This is probably the most woo-woo this gets. So I brought one of the sculptures home one night. It didn't kind of do what I wanted it to do. It looked a little wonky. The lines weren't the curves that I wanted. So I took it home. And that night, it was very quiet in my apartment. And that evening, I heard a voice speak. And it said, and this is verbatim what it said, "We're here. We're willing to talk with you." And I was just like, whoa. So the portal was working. And I did these in a circular shape because I wanted them to be a portal. They ended up being shaped like seed pods to help the viewers understand the concept more. But this one that I used in this example showed the weave a little better. So I thought, okay, well, no pressure or anything, right? So that happened. And then in the spring of the next year, I tested the work. And I was in a warehouse built room about the size of this room. And I went to the corner. So I would stand next to the work and I would test the work using the tools. And I would stand back and test them. And it kept registering the trio of higher harmonic frequencies that are target frequencies for the science. Those are the frequencies that if you achieve them, you transmit the EMF wave and you open the portal. I kept moving backwards, and until I was about 45 feet away, that's as far as I could go, and they were still testing positive for this emanation. So I thought, okay, well, that was cool. And then when I was getting the training in the summer previous, part of the signatures that I had to get in that proposal to get that independent study credit was that the work would be verified or at least tested by the instructor. So it wasn't just me saying that I was doing this correctly, because the goal was to apply this science to art, right? The guy ended up being unavailable. He was very firm about it. He said, "I don't have time to spend any time with my students outside of class." So he just would go home every day right after class. And I was sort of left thinking, well, okay, you know, I guess I just have to wing it here and hope that I'm doing this correctly. And my testing was working, but being a student, I wanted that confirmation. So I decided to write to the founder in Cairo. And I thought, well, he's a world famous engineer and architect. He's like, why would he ever spend time on me? You know, who was I? A few months went by and I got a very long email from him. I was eating cereal at the time and I cried with joy into my cereal. Because not only did he take the time to write to me, but he said he tested my work in his Cairo lab. You can test this remotely. And he said it's very effective. And he congratulated me and said, you're engaging the science as was intended, you know, creating new designs using the science. I was just blown away. And I thought, well, there I've got that independent verification that I can then present to my committee. So right after that, so pretty soon after that, I passed moral defense. That was also kind of a tough one because although they were artists for the most part, they were straight world people, if you will. And so I had to convince them that what I was doing was legitimate. So that was kind of an amazing experience to pass that. And then right after that, I got awarded this 6-month exhibit at the Port of Portland. And the reason why I mentioned that and why it was significant to me is because these are resonant objects, right? They were exposed, we calculated it over that 6-month period, to about 7 million people passing through the port, right by that exhibit. So those people were exposed both physically and in their consciousness to that energy. And that's how many chances do you get to expose viewers to, you know, your art in that volume, right? So that was amazing. I wish I would have taken a survey or something to see what their experience was. So then, fast forward 3 years, I took a break. Everybody I've ever met who's ever gotten a master's degree almost died. Has anybody gotten a master's degree in here? Do you know what I'm talking about? It's really hard on so many levels. So I just took a break. I didn't want to deal with it at all for a while, but I intended to pick it up when I was ready again. So I moved to Pasadena to be around family. And I did not know until, you know, coming to Cross Campus that there's this huge innovation community here. Fast forward to very recently, you know, as you mentioned, I was nominated to speak for being innovative. That 2-minute talk, I think it was about a month ago or two, led to being approached with a referral to an investor. Someone said, this guy would be interested in what you're doing. You should talk to him. So I reached out, did my due diligence, and we just had our second meeting finally. It's been hard to get that meeting. We finally had that meeting yesterday, weirdly enough. And it turns out that his proposal moves the brand into a partnership with engineers, which is exactly what I had hoped would happen. And I didn't even really do any, like, it just feels like it's all just happening, right? So I wanted to share that journey to kind of give you a window into that spiritual side of this. When you're considering what this could mean for projects you're working on, there is that component of opening the portal because it's such woo-woo speak, but that's literally what's happening. There's that you're being influenced by these intelligences, right? And I should say, I think I didn't mention, when I discovered this weave pattern or the knit pattern was weird, it wasn't like what the YouTube video said it should be. I went with it, and I later realized through a series of kind of unfolding, I don't know, synchronous experiences that I think that's where the netters actually stepped in and were like, let's influence this. I don't have a way of proving that. I just think that's where it started to happen because that weave ended up being the reason why they tested for the frequencies. So, okay. Now it's going to get, like I said, the slides are going to be easier. Again, just ongoing synchronicity. I got an email newsletter that I've subscribed to. It's called My Modern Met. It's not specifically related to spiritual stuff or art or anything like that. Just kind of a cultural newsletter. And I got it right after building the slides I'll be showing you next on wearables. And the headline was, Sony develops wearable air conditioner to keep you cool on the move. And that might sound great, but to me, I was like, oh no. It's terrifying to me. You're wearing this right near the base of your skull, directly on your spine. And what is it doing? It's pumping electromagnetic radiation into your body, right? So I just think that's that synchronicity, that coincidence is something to pay attention to as part of the spiritual aspect of the science. It's kind of a guide. It's kind of an indicator. So our current technology, as I was saying, wearable devices are really cool, right? They empower us to do things. They're kind of neat, you know, wearing a ring that you can use to open your garage door, like, wow, right? But the problem is, and I love this baby picture, because the baby's heart isn't even fully developed yet. It's not going to be for a while, right? I mean, it's working and developed, but it's like, it's not a mature heart, and yet we're putting this EMF emitting device right over its heart while it sleeps for 8 hours, right? Or maybe babies don't sleep that long. But a lot of people are wearing these devices all day, and in some cases all night too. A lot of these devices will monitor your sleep and tell you how to improve your sleep. So you're literally sleeping. It's like putting your cell phone right next to you on your pillow, you know, and leaving it on. I think it should be obvious why I'm concerned. So anyway, I want to talk about smart jewelry, because jewelry is an area of interest that I've had from the beginning, and I make jewelry. So I want to talk about the functionality. Now, these are some aesthetically pleasing examples. There's a couple bracelets and a ring. So this top one, it's an activity tracker. Again, that's sleep monitoring, so you're wearing it at night. And then it has this well-being component as well as the tracking component, where it's reminding you, it's sensing your heart rate or something and saying, you know, you're stressed. You need to do some breathing exercises or drink some water or whatever. I think that's really important to note, particularly because when we're dealing with the science that I'm talking about, there is that connection, that portal. And that, if you think about, you know, well-being and connection and remembering to meditate, what about a direct connection to the divine, right? I think that's maybe significant when we're talking about well-being. Okay, so then this bracelet in the middle, activity tracking, et cetera, goal creation, mindfulness, et cetera, right? The ring allows you to unlock doors, right? But it's based on NFC, which is near field communications. There's security risks to that, but there's also, you're in a field of electromagnetic radiation wearing the ring, and it's right up against your skin. So now I want to talk about aesthetics. Being an artist, I have my standards of what is aesthetically pleasing. So I'm not here to judge anyone's aesthetics at all. I just want to talk about what I see as kind of, it's being missed. There's an opportunity here that's being missed. The top left potentially could be worn maybe to a corporate event. This is just me, my judgment, you know. But it's not up. You couldn't really wear that necessarily to a basketball game. It might be too heavy. It's probably about this big. The shoe, I don't know. It stands out, right? Wearing a hood without, I don't know. It just might not be applicable to wearing to an evening like event. Sticking a sticker on the back of your phone. I mean, it's not the worst looking thing, but then we have what I would call, and I don't mean any offense here, kind of like the hippy dippy pendant thing, where you see, you know, with the flower of life on a pendant and it's supposed to be good for you. And then there's, you know, so you just kind of see, in my opinion, there's room for aesthetic improvement in terms of the solutions. And when I say solutions, I mean, these are devices that are being sold to counteract EMF. So you wear these devices and they theoretically block the EMF. I have no idea if these are working or not, right? That's not really the topic of this slide. It's more just about how they look. So then I want to talk about practicality. Again, we're not talking about functionality, whether it works or not. I actually had purchased the sticker on the top left, you see, and stuck it to the back of my phone. It's I got it at a health fair I went to, and this guy tested my muscle strength and said I needed it. And I thought, well, why not? I'll try it. It was fun. It was about $20. And it's kind of raised, and so it made it so that my phone wouldn't sit level. It made it hard to fit into certain things. I just thought it was impractical. It's made out of organite. Just, I don't know if people know about that. I don't know if organite works or not. It's one of the solutions that are out there. Wearing an apron might be good if you work in a lab all day, but then what about when you go get in your car and you drive home and you go out with your friends, right? You can't wear an apron all the time. I mean, you could, but who's going to do that? Carrying rocks around in your pocket. First of all, we don't know if the rocks are actually working, but it's maybe less convenient. And then I think this tank is one of my favorites, because she's going to have to either buy 7 of those and do laundry every week, which is close to $1,000 just for a shirt. And she can't wear any other shirt just to protect herself. It's impractical, right? I don't know how many women would be willing to do that. And I don't know how many people would be able to afford to do that. And then there's that shoe again. Also, like if you have a screen over your bed, it could get ripped easily. It's $1,000, et cetera. You know, you see the laptop thing. I have enough trouble lugging my bag around as it is with all the things in it that I need to take to the coffee shops where I work. Here's another thing. You've got a lug and it's $100. Now, I love these caps. There's also a baseball cap, which is cool. But in heat like we've had, I don't think you would really want to wear this beanie. And I think if you're going, again, out to an event where you're dressed up and maybe it's a dinner party or whatever, you're not going to be wanting to wear a beanie or a baseball cap. So there's that practicality issue. So where I want to take this is technology, protection, and aesthetics being integrated from the ground up. This is what the Egyptians did. This is a table that is designed from the beginning using the science. So you can see some of these familiar shapes. There's that ankh again. These are some stacked half circles. That's very important how those are stacked in the direction and all of that. I'm not going to really get into the specifics of the design science because it's extremely, it's deep and wide. But instead of sticking something onto the back of your cell phone that we don't know works or not, why not build the cell phone from scratch using the technology? So this image on the right of, you know, that's the schematic for what the interface is going to be. Well, what if that interface was harmonically designed, right? So objects can be designed from the ground up using ancient Egyptian applied physics to protect us, our well-being, connect us with those instead of reminders to drink water, right? And contact higher harmonic intelligence to either innovate or just evolve as a culture. So this is my last slide, and I just want to end on what I think the opportunity is, at least for what I'm wanting to do, and I think potentially it relates to what people in this audience might be working on or know people who are working on. I think this is just a small but yet another example of kind of that spiritual unfolding that this first sentence ended up rhyming. So I'm going to read it. From elegant wearable devices to home equipment to sports gear disguised as art, technology doesn't have to cause harm if harmonically designed from the start. So it's just little weird things like that all the time. And maybe that's normal. I don't know, but not for me. It stands out to me. So here are some of the areas where I think they need to be harmonically designed. And also some that I'm just particularly interested in. Obviously, the wearables, the smart clothing and jewelry, because we're wearing those against our bodies. I think that that's important. Same with the medical. If we're doing medical monitoring, baby monitors, super important in my opinion. Smart home. This is not really addressing the sort of security issues with a smart home. It's more looking at you just being bathed in EMF coming from all of your appliances and your garage door and et cetera, right? Cell phones, and I think also towers. What if cell phone towers were beautiful, gigantic sculptures that also transmuted the radiation coming out of them to protect us all, right? Smart fitness, like the Fitbit and those kinds of things. And then appliances. I don't know if people are aware of this, but your refrigerator, your hairdryer, they're all putting out a lot of electromagnetic radiation. And you're putting your hairdryer right next to your head, too. Electrical in general, the electromagnetic wave, as I said, has a vertical and a horizontal component. That vertical component is related to the electrical part of the EMF wave. So just anything with electrical would be an opportunity. I mentioned medical health and wellness, and then auto and aviation. So I said that I would say a little bit more about that. And this is particularly important. When you're in a plane, you're up in the air, you're exposed to quite a lot more radiation than when you're on the ground. And when you're in a car, and this is one of my favorites because I do this too, being relatively new to LA, I use my Google Maps to navigate. And I see design clients an hour away and, you know, Topanga Canyon, I don't know how to get there. I use the map. Well, what happens is, you know, you don't have it on airplane mode. It's live and it's bouncing electromagnetic radiation through your body, hitting the metal wall of the car and bouncing back through your body multiple times. You're in a hot box of radiation. So these things, I think, are the best opportunities to cure using this technology. And that's all I had for you. Again, I'm Jadine Mela, and my company is Harmonic Artworks. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Jadine. That was fascinating. Wonderful presentation. We're going to open up to Q&A here. I'm going to pass the microphone to John. This is going to be not a great time to talk about your spiritual journey or what your Apple Watch has done to you. This is a great opportunity to ask Jadine more about her presentation and some of the things that you've discovered. So, John, here you go.
Oops. All right. Since this is not a wireless microphone, you're going to have to come up here to ask your question, or else we're not going to be able to hear you. Did somebody just... No, it's okay. It's still plugged in. Oh, go ahead.
Hi, I was just curious. So you were talking about a device that you were measuring with, and then there was also that I have seen that Egyptian symbol, but is that the device, or what does the device look like? And what is it measuring? How do you know? Like, I just wasn't really sure, like... What's a good measurement? Like, what does it do if it measures good? Like, just wasn't curious. I was curious.
Yeah. Question. Oh, I think she has to answer.
Oh.
She's
like, give me an answer. She wants her answer. Sorry, you're stepping on it. So I think the two parts of that were, what was the device that I was measuring? And then what happens when it measures? What is it doing if it measures positive? The device that I was measuring was the sculpture that I was working on. So it was a knit three-dimensional sculpture. No. And in fact, so the one that I showed you guys, thank you again so much. The one that I showed you guys where it looked kind of like a manta ray, I guess, that was one of the iterations. This was an iterative design program. So I went through a million of these to try to get to where I, you know, wanted to be. That was what I ended up with. And I mentioned this was a seed pod shape and it had a hole through it. So it was that circle. I'm knitting in the round basically. So what I was measuring was basically this thing that looked kind of like a seed pod. It's like, you know, 2 feet by 18 inches maybe, and by 18 this way. And so that's the device I was measuring. Why it's a device is because it you know, was effective at emanating the trio of higher harmonic energies. And those are referred to as the BG3. And it's like, I can't remember the third one. It's something orange, there's a negative green, and negative green is what is emitted from the vertical component of the wave that I said is toxic. Now these are frequencies on the bandwidth of, you know, invisible and visible light that were discovered based on this science. It's all empirically derived, all of this. So it doesn't follow like a Fibonacci sequence of, well, we can guess what the next one will be. You have to just test. It's just every object itself has to be tested. So, and then because it was emitting those frequencies, it then meant that that object was a device. It was emanating. It was basically like attracting these netters. It was the portal, and it was also transmuting the EMF wave. So it became that protective device too. So does that answer your question?
What did you measure with?
There's a series of tools that we use in the science to measure with. And if I told you, I'd have to kill you. but no, it's a scientific process. It's, what I usually did is I really was interested in my intuitive, how close was I intuitively to this at all? And in fact, when I went to the training, I had all this jewelry that I had been working on. I brought a bunch of it to test because I wanted to see, where is my baseline? Am I doing anything intuitively correctly? Turned out about half of it was emanating just from my intuitive sense of what a good design was. That fascinated me, right? So what I did was I started out with a design. I then tested that design using the tools. And what you're doing when you test is to see if there's a resonance. So remember how I talked about octaves? You're seeing, is it hitting a node? Are those frequencies actually matching up to the frequencies that we're targeting, right? That's more or less what happens. And then once I tested, if it wasn't, I would redesign and then test again and just keep going until I had the target frequencies. So without going too much into it and giving away secrets, that's pretty much.
And then it counteracts the EMF.
So she asked, does it counteract the EMF? Yes. Yeah. That's basically what we're targeting. Those are the two things that we want to do, and that's what the science allows us to do. So, yeah.
You're next.
Sure.
Can you stand over here so
they
get the feedback?
Sure. Hi, I'm Fernando. Question... So are these principles based on mathematical proportion, a certain aesthetic look to the device? Like I noticed the Ankh, you know, you have that golden ratio between the line on the side and the line at the bottom, then the circle and a certain proportion, and that's what makes it an Ankh. So is it that kind of thing that's going on, or how to explain that?
Yeah, thank you. That's a good question. So there's about seven scales that you can choose to use to apply to the design. Those include number, shape, proportion, color, things like that. In my case, I was coming from this intuitive place, so I didn't start out with, you know, I'm going to apply this scale. It was more like, here's what I made. Let's see if it works and what I have to do to it, right? What I ended up with was a pattern relationship. So it was a geometry. It turned out that so when you knit, and again, I didn't know this till YouTube, right? When you knit, the basic knit purl is making this shape essentially. And throughout the work, it was very visible because the gaps were so huge. In a normal knit, like in the sweater that she's wearing, you wouldn't really see that, right? Because it's how it's supposed to be. It's tightly woven. So in my case, it ended up being a geometric That was what did it, was geometry. Now, with regard to sacred geometry, I get asked that. Sacred geometry is going to definitely test positive for these frequencies. But it's not, again, it's empirically derived. It's not based on, you know, like you can't just say, well, if I use, you know, you could take something and make it use sacred geometry. You could use harmonic proportion, like the golden ratio and stuff like that. And it's most likely going to test positive for that. But that's not what we're doing. We're not just going outside. This is a sort of a very specific system. So I hope that answers your question. Is there more? I'm happy to answer more. I know it's a weird subject. I get it.
No, I know. Golden ratio is one paradigm, but I guess, you know, it's a case of color. I guess that kind of answers what I was asking.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Next question.
Okay. My name's Gary. I think I only noticed you mentioned one word, organite, and was wondering what was that actual substance and if there are other substances that are very effective.
I don't think I understood the question. Organize?
Yeah, organite.
Oh, organite. Yeah. Oh, so I did a bunch of research to figure out who else might be doing stuff like this. And organite is a... there's a lot of videos on YouTube about people who are grinding up a bunch of stuff. I think it's got like metal filings and I don't know exactly. And it's really weird and I don't know if it's real or not, but I've watched some pretty interesting videos on it. But yeah, it's spelled O-R-G-O-N-I-T-E and it's comes from Wilhelm Reich's work with what he considered to be this energy that surrounds the planet that we can utilize. And it's so if you just look up Wilhelm Reich or orgone or organite, you'll find that. And then I think your question was what else? I would say you probably would want to look into I would Google like EMF protection and you'll find a bunch of stuff. I think for my purposes, testing all that stuff is outside the range of what I want to do. But I did for one of the assignments in the program I was in, we had to compare another person doing something similar to what we were doing and sort of critique it. And I actually posted my critique to the Facebook group before turning it in and Dr. Kareem answered it. I don't even know why he responds to me. It's weird. But he said, this woman had been doing these pendants that were similar to Dr. Kareem's pendants. And she was basically lying, he said. He said, I know this woman, I've tested her work and it doesn't work at all. It's just a fake. She's selling this stuff saying that it's using the technology and it's not. So I would definitely, do some research to look into EMF protection devices or EMF protection, and you'll find a ton of stuff out there. So.
Okay. Next question.
Hi, Monica Urquidy. I had a question on scalability. How scalable is this? Could it be put into, we have like developing nations and our nation needs more infrastructure too, in large scale infrastructure projects. And then also, because you didn't mention this part, the money in the deal. I mean, have you done an ROI as to the cost to society, the cost of what you're avoiding? In other words, like cancer, have you done that? Have you done the dollarized version? In other words, what's going to sell this to large? I mean, you don't want to be at a fair selling this, right? I mean, you know, what's going to sell this to somebody?
Thank you for that question. So the first one about scalability, it can be applied to anything. I could redesign that lamp shade and make it, resonate. You can make a shoe. You can do a keychain. It's applied to any kind of object. Being that I was, landscape designer before I was an artist, I was providing a service, a plan. I wanted to design objects too. This is object based. You could do a microphone stand. So it's scalable. You could design an entire city. In fact, that's what Egypt did. All of their architecture is based on this science. So all the proportions of it. A really good thing to look into is the Temple of Man. I forget the guy's name. I think it's Shlomo de Lubitz. Fascinating critique or investigation of this, but that's one of the Egyptian temples, and it's got a lot of really interesting geometry related to the human body. The second question about ROI, I have not gotten that far into it. When I got done with the master's degree, I was kind of like, oofta, I'm done for a while. It was a big effort, and I achieved what I had wanted to, and so I just took some time off. But now I'm actually meeting with one investor who we've talked about what are we going to do with this if we partner. And we agree that it's probably either in the multi-millions or billions. This is a huge potential if we can carry it off right. He was saying that maybe it's not, the market isn't quite ready for it yet. But I haven't done that research yet. I'm thinking that'll be part of the partnership, where I've got some business support and some engineering support. So I'm not there yet.
Hello, Christina, great presentation. Thank you. I'd like to know if you can tell me more about the program in North Carolina. And also you mentioned that this information was only allowed to be taught there. So can you expand on why? And
yeah, so if you go to my website, harmonicartworks.com, there's a link to the source material, and I would direct you there because it's really complex. And I hesitate to try to explain it just off the top of my head. The reason why it was only allowed to be taught at that institution was because the science is quite exacting. It's very specific. It needs to be done with utmost care. It's a very scientific process. And there are a lot of people just sort of faking it or, you know, trying to hack it and say that it, you know, and all that stuff. So the intentions of the founder are very pure and very specific. And so this teacher was trained by him to do it correctly. And certainly in my experience, the teacher was the most like by the book kind of serious guy I've ever met. It was just like, you know, this is what we're doing. And it was very methodical. So I hope that answers your question. So if you go to my website, and I'm happy to give you a card to find it, but that it, you can link to it there. Yeah.
Any more questions? Got a question for you. The knitted sculpture that you created that you said may have opened up a portal and that you heard voices. Were you able to replicate that? Have you heard voices again with other messages on how you can utilize this technology or the science to do what you're currently doing? And then the other question is, has anybody else experienced the same thing as far as hearing voices or messages?
So I have had this mystical journey my whole life. I've been kind of, I consider myself to be a mystic. What that means is that I have some sort of esoteric ability. I have a little bit of what's called clairvoyance, which just translates into clear seeing, clairaudience, which is I can hear outside the normal range of frequencies that the human ear picks up, and also what's called clairsentience, which is these are all extrasensory abilities, if you will, that were discovered and validated by an MIT graduate researcher. It's in a book called You Are Psychic. I highly recommend that book. It teaches you what he found empirically to access and develop those organs. So I've been getting waking words, is what I call it, for years. And they don't come every day. They usually, though, come when I'm coming out of I'm in the hypnopompic state, which is a brainwave state. You know, you've got beta, theta, all that. Hypnopompic refers to when you're kind of in that twilight zone. It's when you're most receptive. And I'm very active, and I think all the time. I got a lot of projects going on. So it's kind of probably pretty hard to reach me when I'm not in that state. So I always record them. They always make sense. They're full sentences or very clear phrases, and I use those to guide me. I feel like the way that, you know, the Netters, or I would just say it's the Netters, have communicated with me throughout this experience is in a variety of ways, not just through those words. The unfolding of the project, the weave, the knit pattern that happened, hearing the radio show, having the artist's way put in my hands, getting into art school in 2 weeks, not thinking I had the funding, and then, you know, being kind of pushed to the left and then finding out I did have the funding, all of that stuff that happened, those to me were all guidance from something bigger than myself. And I followed it because I value that. I'm not sure how other people are engaging this. From my understanding and my interaction with Dr. Kareem, he said that a lot of people are not doing it how it was intended, which is instead of taking the designs he's already empirically derived that we know work and just kind of reusing them, or maybe making multiples of them or something, he really wants people who take this training to actually use it to design new things, right? To put it into, to use the design process to develop new objects. So I haven't found a lot of people who are doing that, but I think that's partly just because I went brain dead kind of after grad school. I just was like, okay, I need a break. And Pasadena has kind of inspired me. It's the right time for me to pick that up again. So maybe that's a good thing to look into, to find it, try to network. I am on a Facebook group where they ask each other questions and talk about stuff. So.
Amazing. Thank you. Before you step down, come over here. I'm going to get a photo of you with our amazing audience. Okay. You ready? Everybody say electromagnetic field. Your marks, get set, go. All right. Perfect. Thank you so much. That was a really fascinating presentation. We haven't had a presentation like that, and it's amazing to hear some of the startup and entrepreneurial things that people are doing that are right here in this group. And so I really encourage you to develop relationships with people. Thank you, JD. And one more round of applause for her. So next week, we have Austin Clements. Austin is a venture capitalist. He's going to talk about what it's like being a VC and what it takes to become a VC and run a VC firm. He was a partner at 10110. He's recently spun off and created his own firm. And so he's going to be here next week talking about VC and raising money and what that's like. So I really encourage you guys to come next week. Have a great weekend. Thank you so much.